Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5, hour number two. Thank you for sticking with us. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Mayor Sims, Dave Baker will be with us. Joins us in studio. Looking forward to that. Also on the program from the 1st Congressional District, or the Republican nominee for the 1st Congressional District, Jerry Carl will be in studio. And then we will have the bottom of the 11 a.m. hour from Yammer News, Editor-in-Chief Sean Ross. I guess caught up on everything else that is going on. Like I said, the thing that's dominating the news today is obviously Joe Biden's selection of Kamala Harris, Senator Kamala Harris, a junior senator from California, to be his running mate in November, Democratic National Convention, or whatever the virtual moniker for that will be. That will that goes down next week. We'll see how this plays out with all the what kind of theatrics will be in place on the world's largest Zoom call. I'm sure we're all very excited about those possibilities. What would be really fascinating to watch is how this rollout continues to go. The media are going to praise it to high heavens no matter what. Just watch. What's the enthusiasm? Did this raise the enthusiasm for that Biden ticket? He's in good shape. I don't think it does. I think they know that they're in a good place and they didn't want to do anything to really make it crazy. Keep in mind, guys, Kamala Harris very underperformed, I would say, to what she, as good as she could have been in that Republican primary in the early stages last year. It just seems she underperformed in a big way. Had one splash there coming out of one of those debates where she was throwing some punches and then just kind of faded. She didn't build off of that. What kind of campaigner is she going to be? Are we going to see Kamala Harris out on the campaign trail? She did have her, if you go back and look, she had one big event in Oakland when she did her announcement. Very big event, but I'm going to tell you a secret. Democrats are going to probably win Oakland, California, no matter what. It was just kind of an exciting time for the hometown person. I get it. That certainly no small feat, but at the time, it drew a lot of eyeballs. It made for a great photograph. It just never, it just didn't continue from there. It was a kind of a nice wave, and it was the exciting one, and all the, you know, a lot of the A-list reporters, they were there to cover this time in history, but it wasn't meant to be. But we'll get another shot at it with the vice presidential run, so we'll see what kind of campaigner Kamala Harris is. I'm looking forward to that. I think, guys, my early prediction, I think we're going to be underwhelmed. I think the build-up here is so much. It's so intense how great it is, and once you start seeing that splash actually in play with the interviews, I mean, is it just going to be beat up on Trump all the time? Is that going to be enough? And maybe that is enough to gin up some excitement. I don't know yet. But if you base it on her 2020 campaign run, I don't know. I guess the only way it could go from there is up. A couple other things going on in the news. The thing we like to talk about here is this mask lawsuit was dismissed. We like to talk about masks a lot in Alabama, and are they an infringement on our rights? You know, the government telling you to do anything. Well, I think when the government tells you to do something, and it is a it is an infringement on your rights. So there was a lawsuit filed by, I believe, three people up in Jackson County, in Scottsboro, to be precise. Two retired sheriff deputies, a real estate agent, Debbie Mathis, named in the suit. Dismissed yesterday by a Montgomery Circuit Judge, Greg Griffith, said that, that Ivy was within her power. There's no, there's nothing saying she cannot do this in a state of emergency. They're going to appeal it. I would wonder why we didn't get to hear these legal arguments there's been some briefs filed, but the lawsuit's not going to happen. It's going to have to go to another court to be heard. If you can't beat it on the legal front, here's what you're going to see, guys. You're going to see some wholesale changes, I think, when the legislature gets back together in 2021. What kind of powers do we give the state of Alabama to be involved in our everyday life? What kind of shutdown authority, interrupt the economy? There was a big pushback early in that whole shutdown fiasco. I think it's a fiasco because there is, sitting here today on August 12th, maybe it slowed it down, but the pandemic is still running its course. Now, it appears the SEC is going to proceed with college football. I remember that was like one of the big reasons we had to do social distancing and mask. It was like, hey, children, if you want football, then you got to be good and do what you're told. And it's not clear to me. We may see the start of football season, but we're not going to see the entire thing. It's a scaled-down version of what we were supposed to see for 2020. No out-of-conference games. A scaled-back season. Delayed. So that gets to the whole question of we're doing what we're told and we're enacting all these policies. And people are going along with it, I think, in the big cities for the most part, which that's another question I have about this. But what is the goal? What are we going to get out of this? What is the objective? If you tell me I social distance and I wear a mask, is this going on indefinitely? What do the case numbers have to be? Is there a benchmark? Is it a benchmark that maybe goes outside beyond the borders of Alabama and we still need to have these precautions in place? Because it becomes a situation like New Zealand, I believe. They went into shutdown and they had four cases in one of their major cities in New Zealand. And because of those four cases, they shut everything back down. Very, very strict in New Zealand. Which is clearly, that tells you they're just trying to eradicate it by keeping everybody quarantined. What are we doing? We're throwing a bunch of stuff out there and saying this might work, this may not work, this could work. And the shutdown come at a great expense. A lot of people lost a lot of livelihoods, a lot of capital. It come at great government expense, $3 trillion, and that's still not settled. It's not clear what direction that's going to go. But I think if you just tell people we're doing this for a reason and give them a little more sense of where we are headed or what you want to see out of this, then maybe you don't get quite you don't get these lawsuits arising. That you make sure that you tell people this is temporary. This is not going to be how we live the rest of our lives, because people don't know that. You haven't really offered that. I've been talking about the governor in particular. But some of these other guys that we see on TV that were told the smartest guys in the room. I mean, I wear the mask. My other problem with the mask ordinance in the state, we had the attorney general on earlier in the show, and, you know, there's no citations out there. What's the enforcement like? You know, when you go to other places in the state of Alabama, the more rural places, and I've had this happen to me, you show up in a mask, they look at you like you're going to rob a bank or something. Why are you wearing a mask? We don't have coronavirus here. It's not a universal enforcement. That makes me wonder, if we're all in this together and we're trying to achieve a certain goal, if some people in the state wear the mask and some people don't, are we going to be able to achieve said goal, even though the goal's not clearly stated? So if we have people, we see the numbers go down in Mobile, but let's say they spike somewhere else like Andalusia. Does that mean we have to all wear the mask here in Mobile, continue to wear the mask in Mobile? And that's the problem with the one-size-fits-all approach for government. Government's not good at the nuance. I get that. But we don't even know where we're headed. We're just going to do this until there's a vaccine. My suspicion really is until there's some kind of liability protection where businesses can't be sued. Because the Alabama government, let's face it, a lot of the decisions are made for the betterment of the business community, and that comes first and foremost. That's the priority. I mean, it's just how it is. People may not realize that. And if you put a mask ordinance in place, well, then it's, instead of Walmart having to enforce a mask ordinance, you're required to by the state of Alabama, so that these businesses, these retailers and these restaurants and whatnot, they can say, well, it's not really us making you wear the mask. It's the state. It's the local ordinance. It's a power beyond our control. They don't take the blame. And then that works for them, you know? Like, oh, well, I don't really want to wear the mask. You know, I think there's a lot of you out there that just think this is all silly. It's all a charade. It's all virtue signaling or something done to make us feel better about it. But we don't know where we're going. We don't know where we're headed. And in some cases, I do think the instinct to require people to wear masks, maybe not now, but maybe some of these places that did it early on, like City of Birmingham, here Mobile, Montgomery. Montgomery was very aggressive early on. It was done out of politics. It was done because that's what all the people, the smart people, were saying on the left side of the spectrum, and we're going to go along with that, that we're more quote-unquote progressive than the rest of you rubes in Alabama. But I ask, let's know where we're going, what we need to achieve, and don't just tell me, as they did early on, that we need to do this, or you don't get to see football season, or you don't. Nick Saban and Bo Jackson told us to say, all right, we have a plan in place. We're not going to make this up as we go along. We're not mid-air building an airplane. Okay, we think we know what we got going here. Here's the hand we're dealt. Instead, it is, well, the CDC says so. Well, Dr. Scott Harris, state health officer, says so. And I think that's the frustration for a lot of people. So when you, if you just inform people and make a rational argument for doing a lot of this, then I think my people might be more willing to go along with it. You won't have the pushback or the outcry. But people don't want to be treated like children. They don't want to be told what to do. We're not high school kids. Well, most of us aren't high school kids, I mean, I'm sure, you know. But if you're a voting adult that pays taxes, be told you have to wear a mask or you're not allowed to go out to eat, I mean, how does that make you feel? And some of you may be okay with it, but there's a lot of people that aren't okay with it. But they contribute to society in a positive way, and they think they ought to be treated with a little more respect. But is are our leaders and government even capable of that? So that's all we ask, and we try to get these guys on, and we offer up questions, and we try to get them to answer. But the initiative, I think, should be on the other side. And I can be honest, I'm really underwhelmed by Governor Ivey. I mean, when was the last time we saw Governor Ivey give a press conference or an update? Whereas Andrew Cuomo, he's on TV every day. Some of these mayors are on TV, and these governors are on TV every other day, giving a press briefing, giving an update. We may get one or two a month. I don't think that's sufficient, particularly if you're going to compel people to do something and use the power of government. You're going to compel them to close down their business, to limit occupancy, to wear a face mask, to perform social distancing, to shut things down, to have certain sanitation standards. If you're going to compel them to do that, then you need to be forthcoming with the reasons why and how and where. And when I say where are we going with it? But it's not going to be settled in the courts. It's got to be settled at the executive level and then perhaps later on in the legislative branch. Got to take a time out here. We will return. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend, was going to keep you free and clean.
Jack Daniel's whiskey at 1.5's is how the folks around here have been living their lives.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Coming up in the next segment, Sims Mayor David Baker joins us here in studio. We're up in the bullpen as we speak. What we have, like a makeshift green room, I would say, that will be coming up here soon in the 4 o'clock hour, the 11 a.m. hour. be joined by Alabama District 1 Republican nominee Jerry Carl. And later on, we will close it all out with Yellowhammer News's Sean Ross. I've been working on a story here. So I write for Yellowhammer News, Breitbart. I do a lot of different things in addition to hosting duties of the Jeff Poor Show. How convenient there's a Jeff Poor Show for Jeff Poor to host. But I digress. We had State Representative Shane Stringer on the program yesterday. And there's two highways in particular. And we're going to talk to Mayor Baker about this too, I think. But Highway 45 and Highway 98 from Mobile to the Mississippi state line are, I think, just grossly underserviced. When I say underserviced, they ought to be four lane to the Mississippi state line. There's just riding around, going through Citronelle yesterday, checking out the sites and all of the truck traffic. And here it is, the crown jewel of Mobile economic development. It all is the Port of Mobile and the dredging for that. That is the end-all be-all. What's going to happen? How are you going to get those containers in and out of the port? If you're at I-65 and I-10, I get it. But those two thoroughfares, 98 and 45, just full of 18-wheelers and truck traffic. And these aren't new highways. These have been around a while. Why aren't they four-lane already to the Mississippi state line? And Representative Stringer voted for the gas tax. Jack Williams, his counterpart in the Senate, voted for it, the Rebuild Alabama Act. And yet we're told this is not a priority for the Alabama Department of Transportation. But the truck traffic on those two highways is a sight to behold. There's a lot of commerce going up and down those roads. You hit Mississippi, and it's like the parting of the Red Sea. Four-lane highway, it just looks like two things going on here. Obviously, and I always made this case to all my friends around the state, the bookends of the state, Huntsville and Mobile, they are overlooked by a lot of the policymakers that run Montgomery. I think that's been that way historically. Mobile, I think, is even in a different situation. It's different culturally, and a lot of people see it, North Alabama, as like a runaway province or something. But also there's a reluctance by the Alabama Department of Transportation to build up highways, I think, to state lines. They don't see that as, you know, that interstate commerce as important. That, well, you know, it's people leaving the state. Because there are multiple examples of this around the state of Alabama where you get to the last big city and then it's the two-lane road on out. So Mobile would be the last big city for 98 on the way out of the state. Same with 45. Highway 84... The four-lane kind of ends there in Andalusia, but it goes all the way to Georgia. But from Andalusia to Mississippi, it's two lanes. These U.S. highways, they don't get the improvements I think they need to the state line. Or if they do, it comes at the very end, the very last part, the very last segment they do. But there ought to be a push to get this done. 45 has been around a long, long time. When I was a child, there was talks about four-laning it. Same with 98. 98, Highway 98 going up through Sims and into Wilmer and then on to Mississippi to Lucedale. I would say there's at least an environmental component. The environmentalists don't like the idea of the possible contamination of runoff or things like that into Big Creek Lake, into the drinking water for Mobile. Fine. 45, you don't really have an excuse. There's nothing but woods up there, except for Citronelle. And it's not like it would be a heavy lift to get the right-of-way. There just hasn't been the will. The will has to come from the state of Alabama. It has to come from ALDOT. And I think that needs to be more of a priority. I think for safety reasons, but the big reason that is often overlooked, it could be a hurricane evacuation route. I mean, they do the counterflow up at 65 where they open up all four lanes going north. 45, I remember as a child leaving, well, into Mobile as a child, and we would leave, evacuate for hurricanes. and you go up 45, and you just it's a log jam going all the way up. And at one time, you could go four-lane through Citronelle, but now they've done away with that. They've done like a turn lane in the median. So it's something that needs to be addressed. I know it's not like the front burner issue, particularly transportation road projects. We're all talking about the bridge over the Mobile Bay. But this is something that I think should have been done decades ago. And it's long overdue. Anytime you bring it up, the policymakers, they just look at you like, well, we got 100 other things we got to do. Well, the money's there. You guys are paying more gas tax, particularly people here. A lot of that money goes. Baldwin County gives money to the state. They don't get as much back. But I would like to see more of a focus put on some things down here. That's just me. All right, got to take a timeout. We will return. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again. Hello, Kansas. Sweet Bill Palmer, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living. Just to send it on down the line.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Wednesday morning to you. How the week flies when you're having fun. I'm just happy to be here. I have survived a week and a half. Actually, right now is halftime of my second week. So a milestone to be celebrated for sure. Still to come on the program today, Alabama's first Congressional District Republican nominee, Jerry Carl, will be with us. That's in the next hour. And from Yellowhammer News, Editor-in-Chief Sean Ross. Make sure that you stay tuned for that. But join us in studio. Pleasure to announce my next guest. He is the mayor of Sims. David Baker joins us in studio. Mayor, how are you this morning?
It is a fantastic day, Jeff. Thank you for having me here today on your show.
Hey, thank you for coming in. It's always good to get around the community. First thing first, COVID-19. Everybody's having to change the way they live. How is that really? How are you guys in Sims dealing
with
that?
Well, it's a good question. We've like every other city, we've had our share of challenges and bouts of issues with the disease, but basically we're holding up rather well. We on our city council meetings, we have masks and we social distance, and we're just doing quite a bit of washing hands and being careful.
People just kind of go along to get along and hoping for the best, it
yes.
seems, right? Yeah. That seems to be the norm in a lot of places. I guess the next question, we'll move on from COVID, but Highway 98 is on my radar all of a sudden. Now, we had Representative Stringer in yesterday, mm-hmm. getting that four lane from Mobile all the way to the state line. I know it's four lane in Sims, but that'd be a big deal for your community, I assume.
It's going to be a major thing. And you're talking about basically the 158 bypass that they're working on.
Well, that but also the 98 from the from your city all the way to the state line.
Oh, yes.
Four lane.
Yes.
To Lucedale and beyond.
Right. Well, it's been a challenge for us because, you know, quite a few of the 18-wheelers coming in from points west, Arkansas, Louisiana, they come right down Highway 98. And there's really no adequate place for them to stop. And so they want to really get to Interstate 65.
Right.
So this new 158 is going to give them a device to get there, and it's going to ease the congestion in our community. So it's going to be a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, because, you know, so when I was very, very young, I lived in Sims before it was incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always kind of, there was that bottleneck coming out of Mobile and on, and there's always been talk about getting that done. It just seems like it's dragged on and on and on. Here we are in 2020. I'm in my 40s,
mm-hmm.
and we're still talking about improvements or infrastructure improvements around that area.
Yeah, it's a slow process. And, you know, initially they were bogged down with some environmental issues at Big Creek Lake. And then there were some funding issues regarding the project. And it started out at a certain dollar level. And then that dollar level was reduced through time, and then they had to scale down the project a little bit. But they're close now. I drove it with ALDOT a few weeks ago, and except for certain spots, you'd be surprised at how close they are to getting to the bridge in Mississippi. So it's coming along.
So you interact with Aldott. What's that relationship like?
Well, it's a great relationship. Department of Transportation, I've found them very easy to work with. They're good people. They return your phone calls. They send me weekly updates on the project. They tell me how the entrances and exits are coming along. And they're good people. They're trying hard. They have a hard job. Making everybody happy with the roads and highways is not easy. And I think they do the best they can.
Yeah, because everybody wants their roads four-laned or fixed, and then it becomes an issue of where are we going to make our, what are our priorities going to be? But I guess part of that is getting, making yourself, there's a game to be played there to make sure you're at the top of that list.
Right, right, and you're absolutely right. You have to make sure you're the squeaky wheel. You have to go to the meetings. You have to, when they send you these announcements, show up, talk about the project, ask about the project, check the milestones. But we're getting there. We're getting there. And they've told me by the end of 22 it should be finished, if not before.
So 158, that's by the end of 2022.
That's what they said.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's right around the corner.
It's coming.
Yeah, well, that's something to look forward to. What do you anticipate? I was kind of right around Sims yesterday. I rode up 98, or I came back in on 98, but I rode out Lot Road too.
Sure.
It's really, there's a lot more to Sims than I realized.
It is a tremendous area and a tremendous city, and we're growing. And in I've been the mayor for almost 4 years. We've gone during my time from about 3.5 square miles to 12 square miles. And a lot of times people don't know all the intricacies of Sims. Congressman Byrne spent about 4 hours with us 6 months ago or so, and I took him around and he was amazed at all that there is to Sims. It's quite large.
It's becoming a bedroom community.
Yes.
For Mobile. Where we all think, yes, of the suburbs as kind of, you know, Baldwin County or North Mobile County, that Sims is kind of solidifying its position.
Yes. And we have, in the Sims community, we have over 1,300 businesses. And that's incredible. That's incredible. So it's out there, and we have.
So you got a good tax base, and things are going because you know, for a while, early on, there was, you know, the fear that Mobile would try to come in,
sure,
and make that part of Mobile, and then Sims rallied around Farmers City, and now here we are, 2020.
Yes, they nearly succeeded, and we're glad that they did not, because we are able to keep all the sales tax dollars that are used in Sims in Sims. And we poured, while I've been mayor, $5 or $6 million back into city services for the past 3.5, 4 years, every year. So it's going quite well.
So it's the idea, you want to build up that quality of life. And when you look at quality of life components, it just, you know, you're obviously competing against other cities, mm-hmm, in the community, other municipalities in the community, I should say. But getting that, offering something extra, where do you think you need to go right now?
Well, I think, unlike other cities, we have tremendous room for growth. I mean, we could literally expand all the way to the Mississippi line. And few cities have that leeway. Quite a few of them are hemmed in by other cities. So the room and the potential for growth in Sims is almost unlimited. And I think people know that. I think businesses that look at Sims realize that we have a strong, stable city government. We have a fantastic place to live in terms of space and parks and events and good schools. And people want to live there. People want to live in Sims. And we're just delighted. Things are going great.
I guess the trick is, you want to, a selling point is the proximity to everything going on here,
yes,
in Mobile. And then,
yes,
if you can, you could say, hey, it's, you know, that was always in Huntsville, where I just left. I was doing a race up there. Tommy Battle, the mayor, they would always boast about the commute in and out. Do you think you're where you need to be, that people could come in and out, and there's not the traffic issues, you're not crossing the bay or having to wait for the something to happen in the tunnel to clear out? You're just right there. You're right at the doorstep.
You're right. It's a fantastic location. I mean, the other day I had to go over to Daphne from Sims. Took me about an hour and a half. And you're right. The traffic is terrible going east. But we're blessed. We're on the right side of the bay. We touch Mobile, and we're just tickled to death. And what we're really excited about is the new USA new football stadium. Well, if you're coming from the west, going to that new football stadium, you come right through Sims. And we're delighted. That's going to be great for our businesses right there.
Is that really it? You depend a lot on that that traffic coming through on 98 for, I guess, for sales tax revenue. But
oh, yeah. Well, it's a good point. We do not have property tax in Sims. We rely solely on sales tax. And so far, we've been able to make it work. But you're right. That corridor, that Highway 98 corridor, is crucial to us. And I was talking to Al Dowd about that corridor. And if you look at cars per minute going down Highway 98, it's equal to Airport Boulevard. Well, it's equal to Airport Boulevard, University, and 65. So the cars are there. The travel is there.
Because that's one of those I was saying, 98's been there a long time, but it's being realized as one of those major corridors, like you say, Airport Boulevard, 65, and in some ways 90 going, but now 98 is kind of emerging as a place where not just to get people to move to and live, but maybe bring in businesses retail and things like that.
Oh, and they're coming. And before the COVID hit and slowed a lot of especially the restaurant businesses down, I had meetings and pitches with Cracker Barrel, O'Charlie's, Ruby Tuesdays, and they're all interested in coming, and they were going to send some teams to visit, and then the COVID hit. Things slow down.
Right.
I expect them to call me back after this thing settles down, hopefully in the near future.
Is there something you could do to sweeten the pot to bring that? Everybody talks about economic development,
right,
and a lot of that is driven by incentives. Mm-hmm. What do you do on the municipal level in those circumstances?
Well, I mean, some municipalities offer incentives, and those incentives can take different forms. They can be tax referendums. They can be tax, forgiveness. It can be helping with, other objects of the government. But
well, like sewer system hookup and power and all the utilities.
Right.
That we talk to these guys, those are always concerns, making sure those are adequate.
Right.
And then obviously the traffic flow, such a big deal.
Yeah, if you're talking infrastructure, I think we're very solid there. I think we have MAWS, we have South Alabama Utilities, we have good water lines, good sewer lines, good power lines, and our roads are in good condition. We're fortunate as a city, we did not inherit quite a bit of broken down, ruined roads, and the Public Works Department we have, they've done a good job of making sure what we have is maintained and resurfaced, and that the grass isn't growing through the right of ways, things like that.
Yeah, and then it's just that assurance helps so much. So other than restaurants, retail, it seems like there 98 Schillinger Road would be a good spot. It has grown up in the last several decades. I mean, there used to be not a whole lot there, but
traffic,
it wasn't even a traffic light there, I think, in the 80s when I was there. But it seems to be one of those high traffic areas where, hey, if I want a place to feature my services or goods, this is where I want to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is booming. And people visit Sims nowadays, and they haven't been there for 10 years or so. They're stunned. They're absolutely stunned. And we're just thrilled to death about it. We're just thrilled. We're excited. I have a great council. They work with me, great city staff, everybody, the fire department, the sheriff's contract. We have good people, and that makes a difference.
Oh, you talk about those type of issues, policing and fire and whatnot. You're able to do that without property taxes. That seems to be quite a feat.
Well, it is, and I think it basically boils down to carefully watching and managing the funds, not extending ourselves. We're debt free. We've never borrowed any money, and we watch each penny carefully. And if you do that and you're frugal, you can be quite successful with just sales tax. Personally, I don't want to ever see property tax in the city of Sims. I believe we can make it without it. We just have to be careful what services we add. But right now, we have a solid package of the core services, and it's going well.
Was there a clamoring for more services, a school system, or anything like that?
Every now and then, we have considered, and we are going to conduct a feasibility study for perhaps looking at the concept of a school system for the city of Sims. We are going to conduct a feasibility study for perhaps our own police department and jail in the future. But there again, after the feasibility study is completed, probably take about a year, then based on the recommendations of those studies, then we will put it to the people in the form of a referendum. And if the cost is too great, and if we have to say, for example, well, we can have these services, we can have this or we can have that, but it's going to cost this, you know, then you give the chance to the people to vote, let them decide.
And that's but just getting to that point where you're on the ballot, do you say, well, this price tag looks too exorbitant,
mm-hmm.
let's back off of this?
Certainly.
But that's option, that's up in the air.
It's up in the air, and it's a subject for debate, and it's not something you want to rush into. School systems, police departments, as you know, they're very expensive. And we have a good contract with the sheriff's department. And what's great about that contract is we don't have to pay for the police cars or the uniforms for the deputies. We don't have to pay for their benefits, their insurance, their leave. We get the service without all the issues that go along with it if they're actually underneath the umbrella of the city.
But it's something they can do because they are bigger and they have the already built-in overhead.
True.
That they could do it a lot cheaper, perhaps,
right,
than the city of Sims.
They can do it much cheaper, yes. And we have a great relationship with the sheriff. He's fantastic. Sheriff Cochran's fantastic.
All right, we got to take a quick time out here. We get one more segment in with Sims Mayor David Baker. This is the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5.
The first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind, but Mama tried.
They began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Hey, welcome back to the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5. Coming up here, actually warming up in the bullpen, Jerry Carl, the Republican nominee for the 1st Congressional District. We're going to get him on, first time on the Jeff Porsche Show in this incarnation of it here in Mobile. But still have a few moments left with Sims Mayor David Baker. We were talking over the break, something fascinating you were telling me about is the city of Sims provides the local support for the school system there, a little something extra, if you will.
Yes, and thank you for mentioning that. First of all, one of the joys of being the mayor of Sims, and it is a joy, every day is wonderful. I work with great people, great city staff, but you get to reach out and help the schools. And we have a strong footprint for Mary G. Montgomery High School. We have Sims Middle School, Sims Elementary, Allentown, J.E. Turner, Wilmer. And over the past 3.5 years, while I've been in office with the council's help, because the council has to approve all the funding, we have provided over $250,000 to those schools. And they've used it from everything, from the softball team, the football team, music, everything.
I mean, that every little bit helps. That adds up after a while.
Oh, yes. Yes, it helps because many times these programs at these schools, they have to fund their own operations. And so we're glad to help with that.
And it's a community involvement component to it. The people there, they want to take stock in the community. That's kind of something you do.
Right. Yeah. It does foster that. And it's a fantastic community. It's just a great place to live and work.
And your election coming up, you feel pretty good about your chances there?
I feel very good about it. We're basically running on what we've accomplished the last 3.5 years. We're a debt-free city. We're going to build a new city hall community center. When it's finished, we will owe no money. And we have phases 2 and 3 and 4 in the future, and we plan to do it the same way. If you manage your money, you don't have to go into debt, and debt is not your friend.
Well, it sounds like you got a bright future ahead. The infrastructure components are coming along, and then once you get the I's dotted, T's crossed, mm-hmm. you ought to be ready to take off.
Yes, I agree. It's just getting better each day.
Yeah, well, the best of luck to you.
Thank you.
We're going to do this again real soon. Always good to get you on.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much for having me with you today. I appreciate it.
That was Sims Mayor David Baker joining us on the program. A lot going on locally. We're going to try to do more to highlight some of these communities around the listening area, not just be all state politics and federal politics. I can only talk about Kamala Harris so much until I wear of it. Or talk about all the mysterious nature of the corona virus, COVID-19, and what we may try to mitigate the spread of that. So, but we're going to do more of this. I want to thank, says Mayor David Baker, for coming in. We got to take a quick break. We will return. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Proud, and you can be proud, yeah, and I'll be proud. You will, because South's going to do it again and again.